I'm Joanne Ozug, and you are listening to The Road to Carnivore, episode 10. In this episode, we are going to look at the environmental angle of eating meat. People will tell me they like meat and are sold on it being one of the most nutritious things you can eat, but they have concerns about the environmental impact. The dominant narrative is that meat is bad for the environment, and because of that, we should limit meat consumption. But eliminating meat is not the solution. Animals are integral for a sustainable and healthy food system, and cows are part of the solution to climate change. Properly run cattle ranches are carbon negative, meaning they store more carbon in the soil than the cows emit during their lifetime. This is called carbon sequestration, and there are farms that are practicing regenerative agriculture and running this incredible process, where cows take greenhouse gas out of the atmosphere and put it into the soil. I even just saw an article about Microsoft buying $500,000 of carbon credits from a beef operation called Wilmot Cattle Company that practices this type of grazing. But let's get back to the first half of my statement. What do I mean that animals are integral for a sustainable and healthy food system? In order for land to be healthy and sustainable, it needs animal inputs, particularly manure and urine. I've talked a lot about full picture in this series so far. The idea of all sides of the story is really important to me. And my problem with the message around meat and environment, besides the fact that it's inaccurate, is that it's very black and white. Don't eat cows and meat because they're bad for the environment, with the implication that you can feel free to eat as many plant foods as you want. But actually, the greenhouse gas emissions and environmental toll from many plants are higher than cows. Plants are not free, and the environmental impacts of many plant foods are huge. What I'm going to do in this episode is first go through every environmental criticism I've ever heard about meat, and especially beef, and share why they're inaccurate and mischaracterized. Narratives around methane and CO2, water usage, land usage, and cows eating our food are all inaccurate. Then I'm going to talk about why animals are essential for the sustainability of our land, how our use of chemical fertilizers over natural animal fertilizers is damaging the environment, and a little bit about some of the environmental costs of not eating meat. Let's start by talking about water. The narrative with cows is that they consume a lot of it, and that's true. But 94% of the water that a typical cow uses is rainwater that would be there regardless of whether any animals were on the land. This is called green water. It's natural rainfall, and nearly all of the water is peed back out onto the land. All this water doesn't just stay in the cow. You're going to see this theme a lot with the criticisms of meat. A piece of the story is pulled out, like saying that cows use so much water. Again, true, but painting it in a way that is not full picture at all, as though they drink it and it vanishes. They drink it and then they pee it out, and they actually turn it into something that's far more nutritious for the land, urine. Another criticism of meat with the environment is that animals take up land that we could instead use to grow crops. This is again not true. Cows generally graze land that can't be used for farming because it's too rocky, hilly, dry, or infertile. And the Food and Agriculture Organization says that 60 to 70% of the world's agricultural land is best suited to grazing. Next, we have the criticism that animals take away food that humans could be eating. But according to a paper I've linked in the show notes, 86% of global livestock feed consists of materials that are not edible for humans. Most of the feed used for animals is not food we can eat. And cows actually eat a lot of our food waste, upcycling nutrients we can't eat into one of the most nourishing foods on the planet, beef. I want to read an excerpt from an article titled "Why Cows Are Part of the Climate Solution" by Amanda Freund. She says, "Cows have an important role in supporting the whole food system. Plant-based foods also produce byproducts, and cows happen to be fantastic recyclers. As ruminants, they can digest products that humans cannot. Some examples include citrus pulp and cranberry mash for making juice, brewer's grain for making beer, even the cottonseed leftover from making apparel. Each of these byproducts would be destined for a landfill and would contribute to greenhouse gases. Instead, they add value to a cow's diet and are then converted into important sources of protein, beef and milk." Now let's shift over to greenhouse gases and talk about methane. You've probably heard the idea that cows produce methane and that methane is particularly bad because it has more warming power than carbon dioxide. The first thing that's important to understand about the methane burped by cattle is that it's part of a natural carbon cycle where the same methane is cycled again and again. What happens in the carbon cycle of a ruminant animal like a cow is the cow eats grass, which is an existing form of carbon, and the bacteria in its stomach ferments the grass, and methane is burped out as a byproduct of this digestive process. After about 10 years, the methane will have broken back down into water and carbon dioxide that is then cycled back into the ground by plants via photosynthesis, and the cycle repeats again and again. You can look at a great diagram and explanation of this on UC Davis's website. And they explain that even though methane from fossil fuels and living organisms are chemically identical, they have a different warming impact because cows use molecules that are already in the atmosphere and cycle them back and forth, whereas fossil fuel carbon is brand new carbon and new warming. This biogenic carbon cycle from cows is different from when we extract fossil fuels locked underground to burn them for fuel and release them into the atmosphere. I've linked to a joint report from the Food and Agriculture Organization and the International Atomic Energy Agency, where they explain that until 2003, it was incorrectly believed that methane levels correlated with increasing amounts of livestock. But after 1999, methane stopped rising even as livestock numbers kept growing. They state in the report that there is no relationship between increasing ruminant numbers and changes in atmospheric methane concentrations. There's also a 2018 report from NASA where they say that methane emissions have risen sharply since 2006, but they attribute this to emissions from the oil and gas industry and microbial production in rice paddies and marshes. So that's the methane piece, but what about CO2? The general narrative about cows being bad for the environment from a CO2 perspective comes from an incorrect report published in 2006 from the Food and Agriculture Organization titled Livestock's Long Shadow, where they stated that livestock produced 18% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions and was more harmful than transportation. This was an incorrect claim, and once this was pointed out, it was immediately corrected by the report's senior author. But this debunked and retracted claim is still repeated again and again to this day. In the show notes, I've linked to an article written by PhD Frank Mitlohner at UC Davis, where he talks about this and explains how beef became disproportionately vilified in the greenhouse gas discussion. They had used a complete life cycle analysis for livestock, which means absolutely everything. Feed, transportation, capital, the actual emissions from the livestock, everything that had to do with the animal at all. But for transportation, they only counted what came out of the tailpipe while driving. They didn't count the factories for building cars, building the roads, maintaining the roads, building or maintaining the cars, getting all the materials out of the ground, getting the oil out of the ground, refining the oil. I could go on and on. The only thing they accounted for was when you actually drive, what comes out of the tailpipe. So the claim was majorly distorted and was immediately corrected once it was pointed out, but the incorrect claim was already majorly covered and repeated. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, the largest sources of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions in 2016 were electricity production at 28% of total emissions, transportation, which was another 28%, and industry at 22%. Agriculture totaled 9%. Agriculture, specifically from animals, was less than half this percentage, at 3.9% of total U.S. greenhouse gas emission. Of the 3.9% total for animal agriculture, beef only represents 2% of total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. Whether you think that percentage is a priority or not is a personal opinion. Do I think that 2% is a big deal, especially for the incredible nutrition and nourishment that we get from beef? No. But I know that some people will still say that we should stop eating beef in order to eliminate that 2%. But that's not how it works. You have to replace it with something. That's food and nutrition that has to be replaced. And you know from this podcast so far, particularly from episode 3, that plant foods are nowhere near as nutrient dense as animal foods. But even all that aside, and just coming back to the environment, a lot of plant agriculture is far more destructive to the environment overall, which we'll talk about in a minute. But before we leave the CO2 discussion, I want to touch on the fact that there have been a ton of advances in the way cattle and animals are raised in the U.S. in recent years. And the current narrative doesn't reflect this progress. There has been a huge movement in raising cattle in models like regenerative agriculture, and many cattle ranches operate as a net carbon sink. A great example of a farm practicing regenerative grazing and operating as a net carbon sink is White Oak Pastures in Georgia. They write a lot about environmental sustainability on their website, and I want to read an excerpt that will give you a better idea of how regenerative agriculture works. They say, "Using regenerative land management, we rotate complementary animal species side by side through our pastures. The cows graze the grass, the sheep and goats eat the weeds and shrubs, and the chickens peck at the grubs and insects. All species naturally fertilize the land, and our soil is again a living organic medium that teems with life." They also say, Our passion is to create an environment that allows these cycles to flow freely. Microbes feed plants, which feed the animals, which spread urine and feces to microbes, which feed the plants, which feed the animals. We proactively support nature's food chain, using only sun, soil, and rain to grow sweet grasses for our animals to eat. They also note, raising animals this way is not the cheapest method. Our way is, however, the right way for the sake of our animals, our environment, and for the people who eat our products. Our animals are processed in USDA-inspected abattoirs that we built here on our farm, and they are zero-waste facilities. All animal remains are composted on our farm and used as organic fertilizers for our pastures. We have a small-scale organic vegetable farm on our property that grows more than 40 varieties of heritage vegetables, fruits, and nuts. I find all that so cool, and there has been a major movement nationwide to focus on soil health, soil restoration, carbon sequestration, and other sustainability-focused agricultural practices. I've had the opportunity to meet ranchers and see and learn more about what they're doing. And most of these ranchers are families who've been raising cattle for generations. They aren't going to ruin their land. Their livelihood depends on it. Raising cattle in a way that's sustainable is what allows them to keep passing their pastures down to their children. Let's talk about the soil crisis. Animals are an integral part of the soil and soil health, and we are facing major topsoil erosion problems as a result of the shift toward monocrop plant agriculture, which is when you grow a single crop year after year on the same land. It has been estimated that a third of global agricultural land has already been degraded. And in 2014, Maria Helena Semedo of the Food and Agriculture Organization said that if current rates of degradation continue, all of the world's topsoil will be gone in 60 years. That's mind-blowing. What's missing here? Animals. When you grow plants without animal inputs like manure and urine, the crops deplete the soil. Monocropping makes the land infertile to the point where it can't grow anything, and the soil becomes compacted, devoid of nutrients, and can no longer hold water. In order for land to be sustainable and healthy long-term, it needs animal inputs, the manure and urine from ruminants like cows that graze and nourish the grasslands. Cows also increase the water-holding capacity of soil. What makes an ecosystem sustainable and healthy is its complexity and diversity, and it's the nature of grasslands that ruminant animals be there. I want to read an excerpt from the book Sacred Cow by Diana Rogers and Rob Wolf. It says, "How did North America develop such a fertile breadbasket? It wasn't because farmers were growing wheat or tomatoes for thousands of years. It was because millions of bison and other ruminants were grazing and fertilizing the soil." Then they go on to say, "Ruminant manure inoculates the soil with beneficial nutrients and microbes, increasing the biodiversity underground and leading to a much more resilient soil profile. The urine and manure from animals increase moisture to the soil and the microbial diversity of bacteria and fungi that form the gut for the soil in a symbiotic system. Grasslands need ruminants to be healthy. Somehow, nutrients have to get to the land, and they either come from natural animal inputs or chemical fertilizers that are derived from byproducts of the petroleum industry. You need nutrients to grow plants, and animal inputs are much more sustainable and less damaging to the environment." One of the issues that has arisen from the heavy use of synthetic fertilizers has been chemical runoff pollution in rivers and waterways. In 2008, there were estimated to be over 400 dead zones worldwide. What happens in these hypoxic dead zones is agricultural runoff drains into these bodies of water, and nutrient compounds in the runoff, like nitrogen and phosphorus, lead to algae blooms that deplete underwater oxygen levels to the point where it can no longer support marine life. I've linked to an article from the Scientific American that says, "Perhaps the most infamous U.S. dead zone is an 8,500 square mile swath, about the size of New Jersey, of the Gulf of Mexico, not far from where the nutrient-laden Mississippi River, which drains farms up and down the Midwest, lets out. Besides decimating the region's once teeming shrimp industry, low oxygen levels in the water there have led to reproductive problems for fish, leading to lack of spawning and low egg counts. Other notable U.S. dead zones today occur off the coasts of Oregon and Virginia." The last thing I want to bring up in this episode is that the full picture in the environmental discussion needs to discuss secondary environmental costs. If you've listened to the previous episodes in this podcast, you know that I assert that eating meat is extremely important for health across the board: metabolic health, digestive and gut health, endocrine health and our hormones, heart health, mental health, and low-carb diets like keto or carnivore are clinically shown to improve all of these kinds of health, and put many types of disease like diabetes into remission. There are environmental costs of not eating meat, and these costs are enormous. I want to read another section from the book Sacred Cow. It says, using a life cycle analysis approach, one recent study looking at 60,000 households in Japan found that meat consumption was not the main indicator of high food-related carbon footprints. The households with the highest carbon footprints were ones that consumed more fish, vegetables, alcohol, and sugary foods, and ate out at restaurants most often. Meat consumption was a much lower contributor compared to the most glaring offender, eating out. When we vilify red meat, a nutrient-dense real food, does this mean we get a free pass for nutrient-poor, ultra-processed foods that we know are driving disease? What are the other emissions consequences resulting from a poor diet? What are the healthcare emissions of diabetes, for example? Just in America, the necessary 1 to 4 insulin injections per day for treating diabetics results in 13 million needles and syringes per day. There are also lancets, insulin pump tubing, continuous glucose monitoring tubing, and insertion devices to take into account. They then talk about the fact that there are many additional medical conditions that are associated with diabetes, like kidney failure, which requires that patients receive hemodialysis and have their blood filtered. This requires huge amounts of water, medical supplies, and energy. They say, in the U.S., 450,000 people need dialysis. A typical patient undergoing dialysis uses about 18,000 liters of water and 800 to 925 kilowatt hours of energy per year, and this produces over 7 billion pounds of medical waste. A true full picture should account for the health costs of not eating meat and instead eating excessive amounts of carbs that drive disease, like diabetes. The CDC estimated the annual medical cost of obesity in the U.S. to be $147 billion in 2008. You know from this podcast so far that eliminating carbs is arguably the most viable treatment for obesity, and meat is the only food I know of that's nutrient-dense and also zero carb. What I want to emphasize today is that animals, particularly ruminant animals like cows, belong on the land and in our food systems, and they are not destroying the environment. Hopefully you see from this episode that it's quite the contrary. The solution to our environmental issues is not to eliminate cows or stop eating beef. Our ecosystems and land are extremely complex, and animals are an integral piece of the system. To those who still believe that meat is bad for the environment, I want to leave you this excerpt as an illustration of the alternative. It's from a really great book called The Vegetarian Myth, Food, Justice, and Sustainability by Lear Keith. She was an ethical vegan for 20 years until her health got so bad that she began digging into some of the beliefs that she had about animals and eventually started eating meat again. She says, here is an agriculture without animals, the plant-based diet that is supposed to be so life-affirming and ethically righteous. First, take a piece of land from somebody else because the history of agriculture is the history of imperialism. Next, bulldoze or burn all the life off of it, the trees, the grasses, the wetlands. That includes all creatures, great and small, the bison, the gray wolves, the black terns. A tiny handful of species, mice, locusts, will manage, but the other animals have to go. Now plant your annual monocrops. Your grains and beans will do okay at first, living off the organic matter created by the now dead forest or prairie. But like any starving beast, the soil will eat its reserves until there's nothing. No organic matter, no biological activity left. As your yields, your food supply, begin to dwindle, you've got two options. Take over another piece of land and start again, or apply some fertilizer. Since the books, Pleading and Polemical, say that animal products are inherently oppressive and unsustainable, you can't use manure, bone meal, or blood meal. So you supply nitrogen from fossil fuel. Do I need to add that you can't produce this yourself? That its production is an ecological nightmare and that one day the oil and gas will run out? Your phosphorus will have to be made from rocks. There's a reason for the popular image that equates hard labor in prison with chopping rocks. How will you mine, grind it, or transport it without fossil fuel, using only human musculature and without using slavery? For your potassium, you'll collect wood ashes, try some cover crops, and hope for the best. Meanwhile, the soil is turning to dust, clogging the rivers, blowing across the continent. In 1934, the entire eastern seaboard was covered in a thick haze of brown. The topsoil of Oklahoma plowed to cotton and wheat, drifting like an angry ghost to cover the eastern cities and further to ships hundreds of miles out to sea. A final fitting tribute to the extractive economies of the civilized. This is where agriculture ends, in death. The trees, the grasses, the birds, and the bees are gone, and the topsoil with them. More of the same is no solution. So that's it for today. If you're interested, please have a look at the resources in the show notes. Do your own research, but most of all, please share this discussion with someone. The environmental narrative misappropriates the focus onto cows and doesn't accurately reflect the environmental issues we're facing. Thank you for listening to The Road to Carnivore. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you can receive new episodes. See you next time.